Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Brianna Approved podcast. We haven't done a solo episode in a minute, and so it's time. And so today we're going to be talking about the neuroscience behind doing hard things. We're going to, of course, start with the fun fact of the day while I sip cafe, and we're going to talk about different parts of the brain that deal with willpower and why we should be valuing the effort and the process. And then, of course, we're going to do a little segment at the end called Reflect and Connect, where I give you practical tips on how to embrace the suck to help train your brain to do things that you don't love doing. But let's get into the fun fact of the day while I sip cafe. Did you know that willpower activates the prefrontal cortex? Now, this is the part of the brain that's located in the front of the brain, right near our forehead, and this plays a role in making decisions, especially around decisions that deal with inhibition, so like throwing your inhibitions to the wind. And if we have something called willpower depletion, what can happen is that we can actually have decrease in the anterior cingulate cortex, which we'll talk about in a second. And we can also have lower levels of willpower or willpower being depleted due to other things like low blood glucose levels and a person's belief around willpower. So there is this aspect of narrative storytelling, the limiting beliefs that we have around things. And what we know is that there's actually different kinds of willpower. So there's effortful willpower, which means this involves suppression or actively blocking temptations and urges. So let's say you're on a diet and you are trying to avoid sugar, right? You're like doing temptation. The problem with that is willpower is a limited resource, and ultimately biology takes over sometimes and you give in to these cravings. So effortful willpower, trying to kind of white knuckle your way through things. And then we have effortless willpower. And so this is kind of the way that we can motivate ourselves to stick to a plan by using rewards. We can also kind of make different adjustments. We can do habit stacking, things like that. I personally think that effortless willpower, so rewarding ourselves, positive reinforcements, I think are ways to make that last a little bit longer. What the research has also shown is that willpower is usually linked to a practical skill. So experts say that it's actually neutral, and having or lacking willpower is neither good nor bad or right or wrong. It's kind of more so how can we develop skill sets around it and again shift our mindset and the narrative that we have around things. So my personal take on willpower is that it is a limited resource. It generally doesn't last long, especially if there are weaker underlying systems in place, or again, weaker underlying narratives around why you should be doing something, if you're guilting yourself into something, if you feel like you should be doing something. I don't always think that that's the best thing. However, what we're going to talk about in our next section, the idea of doing things that we don't love to do, doing things that are hard, doing things that feel overwhelming or daunting at times, embracing the suck can actually be beneficial to our brain. So we will get into that in our nerd alert. Nerd alert. Okay, so in this section, we are going to talk about the neuroscience of effort plus willpower. I am not the person who originated this research. I'm sure if any of you have listened to Andrew Huberman over the past few months, you have heard him talk about this. Him and David Goggins specifically have an episode where they talk all about willpower. But what we know and what the research has found is that there is an area of the brain called the anterior mid cingulate cortex. Anterior mid cingulate cortex. Now, this is a part of the brain that is activated when people engage in difficult tasks, especially and particularly when they don't want to do them. That is the key factor here. It's engaging in tasks that are difficult that you don't want to do. This part of the brain does not get activated if it's something that you're like, I'm not super stoked about it, but like I'll do it anyway. And I'll give you examples of this in a minute. So the anterior mid cingulate cortex, this is kind of the brain's control center, and it deals a lot with perseverance and how we're resolving things. And it deals a lot as well with cognitive function that deals with willpower. So because our brains are kind of constantly doing this sort of like cost-benefit analysis of all of the choices and actions we make, our body and brains are kind of saying like, is the activation energy actually worth this here? And is the effort, the cost of the effort going to pay out big dividends? And when our brains are really hard at work, the anterior cingulate cortex, again, this is what's tracking our effort. And the neural activity actually appears to kind of go in line with how much effort we're exerting, particularly for this part of the brain. So these efforts that we do, low effort, high effort, can signal to the brain to evaluate whether it's worth for us to keep doing this or for your brain to be like, guys, we've had enough here. We are doing this no longer. And when we have a lot of this mental effort that we're exerting, this can actually activate the sympathetic nervous system. So that fight or flight response. So your pupils can dilate, your heart can beat faster. This is why after doing something that is mentally taxing, you do feel tired. Maybe you feel like extra hungry. You feel like you did like a mental workout on some level. I know when I do a lot of research, I have to eat a snack beforehand or I'll feel hungry or depleted afterwards. So there is some nuances to that. Again, because when we are exerting mental energy, this is activating the sympathetic nervous system. And when we look at the neuroscience around willpower and this anterior mid-cingulate cortex, what we have to take into account is engaging in behaviors that we don't want to do. But what's really interesting is that this area of the brain can actually grow throughout your life by regularly engaging in undesired things that are simultaneously difficult. So, for example, the idea of cold plunging, this is what Huberman explains in his episode. If you're somebody like me, I always joke and say that my entire life is a cold plunge. I have zero desire to go into the cold plunge and be cold. If I say to myself, I don't like doing this, I really don't want to do it, and then I go and do it, my anterior mid-cingulate cortex can actually now and grow. But if I'm somebody who's like, yeah, I did this yesterday and it was actually amazing, and then I go and do it again the next day, that is the caveat here. We have to continuously do things that we don't want to do, that we're not excited about, that are difficult, that can make this area grow. So doing something you don't want to do. This could be going to the gym when you really don't want to do. It's about adding things that you're like, oh my God, I would rather literally do anything except this. So what's interesting is that this area of the brain is actually smaller in obese people, and it can get bigger when they diet. Again, because like, who's excited about doing a diet? No one. And it's larger in athletes, and it can grow larger in people that see themselves as engaging in something that is challenging or overcoming challenges. So this area of the brain can actually grow over time. And again, what the neuroscientists are calling this is kind of the, not necessarily the seat of willpower, but perhaps the seat of the will to live. So because as we know, life is a series of problems that we just get better at solving. We're going to always have difficult things. We have to learn to, on some level, embrace doing these difficult things. And I think if you can understand that there's actual neurological benefits to this, this might entice you to want to engage in that. So again, we can build this area up. We have to do something that we don't want to do. And I think a good segue into that is also understanding where effort plays a role. So if given the option, I think we know that most people would say, if something is easier, this feels better. Effort is really tough. Exerting effort is not something we are always extremely excited about. So if we have a choice of two cognitive tasks, people generally prefer to do the easier one and are willing to accept having fewer rewards to avoid having to try harder. There was actually a study that was done in 2020 that found that people are willing to accept physical pain over avoiding cognitively demanding tasks. So people would rather have physical pain than engage in something that is cognitively demanding. And what scientists call this is the law of least effort. And it applies to animals and to humans. So in research in rats, rats actually chose to avoid physically challenging parts of a maze and cognitively demanding tasks. Now, we're not rats, but I think if people were given the choice to say, would I rather... This is why people don't change a lot of things about themselves, because it requires introspective work. It's physically, it's mentally taxing, and it requires this sense of effort and feeling uncomfortable and kind of going back at something and looking at it at different angles. And so again, effort can feel really costly, quote, if you will, because most of the time, if there's not a set external reward, let's say you're getting a trophy or you're getting a PR in the gym or you're getting a bonus check, right? What's like the mental or the emotional reward for putting in this effort? But neuroimaging and neuroscience has actually shown that there's an area of the brain called the ventral striatum. Now, this is a brain region that plays a role in processing reward outcomes. And it's actually more strongly activated when we achieve something throughout higher effort than with lower effort. So this area of the brain, the ventral striatum, can be activated more when we do something, when we actually exert higher effort than lower effort. And again, we tend to value effort, right? Like we know this, this is a tale as old as time. The more something, the more effort something takes, the more we tend to value it. And this is actually something that we can call type 2 fun. Think about people who go and climb mountains or they are, you know, running outside in the winter. You're like, why would this person ever do that when the exertion itself kind of feels terrible in the moment? This is categorized as type 2 fun. One study actually suggests that the answer to this, like why do people do this, lies in the effort. So researchers have found that rewarding effort, not the outcome, the effort is what actually prompted people to seek out more difficult tasks later, even if they didn't get that reward kind of in the moment. So this goes to the theory of enjoying the moment regardless of the destination, the effort itself actually being rewarding. So how can we actually train ourselves to be more effortful, finding the value in the effort? Again, why do people choose to climb the mountain or wake up for the gym at 5 a.m. or do something crazy, right? Even if they know that there's not going to necessarily be this direct apple-to-apple reward. And this is where I want to close the show out with reflect and connect and this idea of how can we embrace the effort, not necessarily the outcome, and how can we continue to grow? So there is this concept that there's really only two ways to grow in life, by adding something or by shedding something. So do you want to add something to your life or do you want to shed something in your life? I think that's a really good place to start with first. I don't think it's always about adding more things. Sometimes, depending on where you are in your journey, it is important to pause, take a semicolon, and say, where do I need to add something or where do I need to remove something? Now, once you have an honest assessment of that, you maybe are getting to the place where this episode for you resonated and you say like, yeah, I wanna embrace things that I don't always love doing. I know there are some cognitive benefits. I wanna get better at this, but I'm not really sure how. So I have five quick little tips and then you can put these tips into action and be on your way. So number one, if you wanna trick your brain into doing something that is difficult, here are five things you can do. Number one, reward bundling. I love this. So this is kind of like habit stacking where you can attach something that you love to the thing that you hate. So for example, if you hate working out, but you love listening to my podcast, what you could do is every time you work out, you listen to my podcast, right? So or for me, I don't always love doing cardio. I love walking, but I don't always love it. but I love watching garbage reality TV sometimes. So I will attach something I love, like watching Summer House, to something that I don't love, like walking on the treadmill, and I will do that at the same time. So give yourself a reward while you're doing the hard thing. So that's reward bundling. Number two, people are going to love this. Take breaks. It's okay, and it's actually advisable, to take little breaks during a bout of something that feels mentally taxing or you're exerting a lot of effort. So if you're putting a lot of focus on the work that you're doing at hand, it's okay to take breaks. Stick to the plan, give yourself periods of rest, and then interpose that with periods of activity. Episode 60 of the podcast, I give a bunch of different techniques that talk about this, where you can actually kind of time block in sort of, I joke and call it like AMRAP working, where you work for 5 minutes, rest for 5 minutes, so on and so forth. Okay, number three, how else can we trick our brain into doing things we don't want to do? Get a friend, get a homie, get an accountability partner. So having a partner or a friend or somebody that's going to go through the hard things with you is really important. Trauma bonding, if you will, but make it the mental edition. This can be nice because when you're done completing the difficult task, you can kind of do a debrief and say like, wow, at what point did you get stuck? Or where was this hard for you? Or I'm really proud of ourselves that we both actually did this. So I think getting an accountability friend is something that's super underrated, but can yield really high benefits. And then number four and number five, this is actually from a book that I just read that is called How to Be an Imperfectionist by Stephen Guys. If you are a recovering perfectionist, like myself, like most of my listeners, then you are going to want to listen to tip four and five. So number four is we want to embrace our imperfections and focus on actions, taking an action first method. Now, I believe it was Rich Roll who talks about the idea of your mood dictates action or mood follows action. So what a lot of people do when they're lacking, quote, motivation or willpower is that they start to try to think their way into what should I do or what plan should I make. But the antidote to that is doubling down on action. So when we're trying to find motivation, we need to actually be focusing on what action can I take right now? Action affects how we feel. So if you ever notice when you wake up first thing in the morning and maybe you're not in the mood to, let's say, go to the gym, or I know I joke a lot and I'll be like, I'm not feeling really worky today. But then you kind of start to do other things to almost like trick your mind. So I'll make a cup of coffee. I'll read a little bit of a book. I'll maybe listen to some music. I'll do some dishes or something like that. Because what's happened now is I've actually gained momentum, because what I was doing prior is I was thinking of all the things of, oh, why this is going to actually be hard, and I got to go here and I got to do this. And so you've gained positive momentum, and that those actions have done that. So if we're trying to motivate ourselves by just changing the way that we think, what can happen is it can actually trap us in unrealistic thinking, or we can have a proclivity for perfectionism. If this idea in my head isn't perfect, then I'm not going to execute it. We fantasize about the unfolding of certain events. So for example, if you're like, I'm going to go to the gym after work, what happens is the end of the day is kind of creeping up and you're like, ugh, I'm going to be so tired. I'm going to be hungry. There's going to be traffic. It's going to take me 20 minutes. I have to get dressed and then undressed. And by the time I get home, and you go through this whole process in your head that's not even real. So all of these thoughts reduce our motivation. And so what we need to do is that we have to understand that the paradox about your ideas of the process are different from the reality. So set a time frame for yourself. Action first. What's something I can do? I'm going to put 20 minutes on the timer. And once I get to the gym, I'm going to see how I feel. And if I feel great, I'll keep going. And if not, I'll leave. So embrace imperfection, focus on actions, and have that action first method. And then last but not least, number five, focus on the process. Focus on the output, not the outcome. this has been huge for me because as a recovering perfectionist, we focus so much on what the outcome is going to be. We don't enjoy the process. We focus not on the output and the effort necessarily, but what is the end result going to look like? And sometimes that can lead us to a place of non-action or overthinking or getting into a headspace that isn't actually productive for taking that action first method. So if we don't see the process as an opportunity for growth, then that's going to really deter us from wanting to enjoy that process. So the results focus is not great because if we're only focusing on the results all the time, what you're forgetting is that there's so many things that are actually outside of our control when we focus on the results. So let's say you think that you're being so productive and you're being proactive and you're like, let's say you're, you know, applying for a job. You prepare and you got all these questions ready and, you know, you did your homework and you have your little notes and all of that. Like, you're focusing solely on the outcome. And what you don't realize is that there's so much that's out of your control. They might actually already have somebody in the queue for the job and they just have to interview you because it's company policy. Or, you know, they're actually doing a hiring freeze, but you were kind of already on the calendar, whatever it is, right? So like, you have to not worry about the results so much. The outcome is a bonus, yes, but if we can truly focus on the process, enjoying the little steps, small steps help you focus on the process, right? Like if you want to learn to dance, start with buying a pair of shoes. Start with figuring out what kind of dance classes you want to take. If you want to learn a new language, you're not going to do that in a day. Focus on learning 5 new words a day. And remember that perfectionism doesn't guarantee success. The process is more important than the results. Small steps lead to significant results. Little by little is better than nothing at all. And in just embracing the power of the process, I think is going to be more beneficial than focusing on the outcome. So that's all I have for now. I hope this was fun. I hope y'all learned some new things about embracing things that we don't love doing and activating the anterior mid-cingulate cortex, because that can grow over time when we do things that are difficult that we don't want to do. We also understand that willpower is a limited resource, so let's not overly rely on that. And there are things that you can do to trick your brain into doing things that you don't want to do. Reward bundle, take breaks, get an accountability friend, embrace imperfection, and focus on the output, not necessarily the outcome. So hope you all enjoyed this episode. I'll see you soon and ciao for now. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. Mew.